ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hey, Tegan Taylor here from Life Matters. When you think of grandparents, what comes to mind? Maybe a secret stash of lollies? Well, grandparents aren't just spoiling the grandkids anymore. They're raising them and paying the bills. This July on Radio National, The Grandparent Trap explores the joys and pressures of being a modern grandparent. The Grandparent Trap and much more on Life Matters. Search for Life Matters on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Laura Tingle, do you think we're becoming obsolete?
Hamish, what a terrible suggestion. You know, if nothing else, podcast, it's a way of the future.
We live in a time of unprecedented access to information.
The explosion of artificial intelligence means that the sum total of human knowledge is almost at our fingertips.
And not everyone is pleased about it.
You know, there's a huge wave of change unfolding. The big questions are things like, can democracies and facts survive? I'm Laura Tingle.
I'm Hamish McDonald. Let's go roaming. So, Laura, I reckon if you think social media kind of disrupted the way we consume and use information, then I think AI is going to totally surpass all of that in terms of pace and scale of disruption. What do you reckon?
I think it is, Hamish. Like a lot of people, I'm sort of on the fence about it. I'm just sort of dipping my toe into AI these days to sort of see what extra things it can deliver to me in terms of information. And overall, I'd say that experience is pretty good. But you know, there is this overwhelming amount of information out there now and a capacity to influence the way we think, which may be much more subtle than social media.
Yeah, I think the volume thing when it comes to information is interesting because there's a paradox, right? There is so much information, but then when it comes to it, there's so little. Like the transparency piece is being eroded globally. Governments, institutions, PR firms seeking to control and manipulate it perhaps more than ever before, or at least limit our access to the information that we really want to have. And in a way, as a consumer receiver of information, you can kind of drown in it. And on top of that, the broader information ecosystem is polluted. I think Maria Ressa, the Nobel laureate, Philippines journalist, founder of Rappler, talks about the global information stream being so heavily polluted that at a certain point it can kind of leave us, without governments trying to interfere or manipulate, that can just leave us adrift and kind of doubting everything.
Absolutely. I mean, the information stream is polluted. If you try to in any way curate it, whether you're the media or the government or anybody else, it's immediately seen with skepticism and hostility. And sometimes there's a good case for that. But it's very unclear how it all ends up, where, you know, people are just bombarded with this information and they don't necessarily rely on anybody to help them work out what it all means. It's a pretty daunting prospect.
But I suppose the point is that politicians globally, particularly the populists, are pointing the finger at the mainstream media as part of the problem, part of the establishment. And, you know, increasingly people are choosing to consume news and information differently. Some people just choosing not to consume it at all. But the likes of you and me are really being asked, being challenged to prove our worth, to explain what we do and why we should be believed in terms of what we report. And you can see the potency of that as a political message, whether it's Trump in the United States, Farage in the UK, could be Giorgia Meloni in Italy, or a replicable version of that here in Australia. I think we live in a time where the traditional way in which we've consumed news and information is no longer trusted in the way it once was.
It isn't. And, you know, there are all sorts of questions that come up as a result of that. You know, if you just give a collection of facts that you've collected from different people, is that a pure form of reporting? You know, to what extent does opinion or analysis become the way all mainstream media runs? How do you work all of that out, Hamish? How do you work out what's the right thing to do? I mean, I know probably the same as you, I sort of try to take the base of saying, okay, well, here's the way it looks to me, and I will give you all the reasons why I think that is, sourcing it back to the people involved, and leave it to you, the reader or the viewer or the listener, to make up your own minds. But that's all become a lot more complicated.
Yeah, you're just too cozy with the elites, Laura. That is the problem.
Cozy. I've got my elite slippers on as we speak, Hamish.
Look, it's the focus of this year's Ollie Lecture, named, of course, after the late, great ABC broadcaster Andrew Ollie. And it's being delivered this year by Alessandra Galloni, who's the global editor-in-chief of Reuters, which is one of the world's biggest news agencies. They do really a lot of the frontline stuff. They have a subscription model, which basically big news organizations everywhere get their original reporting from. That's where the breaking news straps emerge from. And she's had an extraordinary life. She was born in Italy, grew up in Queens in New York. She was a business reporter after being, as a teenager, a ball girl at Queens for the tennis. She famously rides around London on a motorized scooter whilst running this huge news organization. And she's just arrived in Australia from China. Welcome to Sydney. Welcome to Australia.
Thank you. Thank you. What a treat.
Can facts actually survive in the age of AI?
Well, as you can expect, I believe so. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And in fact, they become even more important. You know, in a world in which you have huge misinformation, disinformation, errors and fake news can travel so quickly, then the facts on the ground become even more important.
But the lies travel much faster than facts in that polluted information ecosystem. Like the data shows us that a lie goes faster and further than a fact.
Well, so interesting. I think facts travel pretty fast as well. I think what happens is that people like to go to places that confirm their biases, right? That confirm what they already want to hear. People don't like hearing things that are different from their own points of view. And that's perhaps why sort of the lies, as you say, sort of travel faster. But when things really matter to people's lives, and we saw this during COVID, for example, when people really needed to know what vaccines to take, you know, whether your school was teaching you the right things remotely, or, you know, where to get your COVID tests or whether to wear a mask. When it was really important things in people's lives, then people would gravitate towards the facts and they demanded the facts. And so I think that tells us actually a lot about what journalists need to do. Tell people things that matter to their lives.
But a lot of people don't trust journalists, don't trust traditional mainstream media. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, well, interestingly, actually, people trust media is pretty bad. Media, the trust in the media is pretty low. But the further you get from humans, actually, trust declines. And so trust in AI searches is much, much lower than trust in news. But yeah, certainly. I mean, we do have a problem. I don't want to be Pollyanna about it. And I think the important thing right now is, again, get closer to your audience, prove to them that you are telling them something that is important to their lives, and that will gradually increase trust.
There is a paradox of both too much information and too little in our world today. Overwhelming volume of information, but too little transparency where it really counts. What can you do about that?
Oh, gosh, that's like a multi-million-dollar question.
It's all on your shoulders.
Well, I think that, you know, obviously my vantage point and my point of view is from the point of view of a traditional news organization. We've been around for 175 years. And so, you know, what we can do as a news agency, we are at the foundation of the news ecosystem. So the facts, the on-the-ground, the firsthand reporting that we do around the world then fuels every other news organization. You, ABC, as our client, like many other news organizations. And so for us, it's really, really important to get those facts straight and verified from the ground. And including if we make a mistake, to be really fast to correct it. Corrections are something that we take very seriously. I mean, it's horrible to have to make a correction, but it's really, really important to improve trust.
There's lots in that I want to ask you about. When you make a mistake, is your correction as prominent as the original mistake?
Yeah, absolutely. Not only is it prominent, but we also explain why we made that correction in the belief that if we made the mistake, somebody else might as well. And so increasingly at Reuters, what we've been trying to do is when we make a correction, we really explain what led us to make that mistake. Because again, it can happen to everyone. And we try to make it as fast and as transparent as we can.
Do you think news organizations should follow your lead in that
Absolutely.
Regard? Because obviously often when a mistake happens, it might be very high profile, the original piece of content, but then when the mistake is reported, it's buried at the bottom of a page, 10 pages into the newspaper, for example.
All surveys have shown that news organizations that correct promptly and thoroughly are more trusted. I think it's a very important part of gaining that relationship of trust with your audience.
I'm curious about, maybe you could explain for listeners what it is Reuters does, because I suspect people will know the name but not really understand the relationship between you and them, because actually the sort of big mainstream media companies are in the middle of that, a subscription business.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have 2,600 journalists around the world. We're in 165 countries, and we report the news from the ground. So we cover conflict. We are in all the major conflicts of the world from the front lines, from the ground. But we also cover financial, economic, and business news. And yes, our clients are, on the one hand, all the thousands of news organizations and media companies around the world. We also have a very, very large financial customer base, which is through a terminal. I mean, now it's a web-based terminal owned by the London Stock Exchange Group. And so our financial and business and economic news, super important. And then we have a direct-to-consumer business, which is our website, our podcasts, our vodcasts, our events business. And that is a growing part of our business. So to, you know, people who might not know exactly what we do, a lot of the news that you might get through other media organizations, so your newspapers or your broadcasters, the original news is likely to have come from Reuters.
In your lecture, I know you're going to talk about the fact that Reuters has been basically licensing your content for many decades, which is something that Australian broadcasters, news media outlets are wanting to do with the AI companies now, because as we've heard in the last week from the Prime Minister, the government's been talking about the theft, the large-scale theft of content generated by these businesses, which then puts the business itself in peril. What's the lesson? What can you share about that process?
Well, you're going to have to wait until my speech for the full lessons. But yes, you know, you raise an important point. One of the dangers of AI and of the tech companies is that they have been scraping our content for free, and you know that's the theft that your Prime Minister was rightly referring to. And I think there are some news organizations that have taken the approach of legal action. You know, and that's important, and that will have an effect on all of us. But then a lot of news organizations, by the way, including the same ones that are also litigating, are signing deals with the AI companies so that the LLMs can train on our information. And yes, at Reuters, we have had, 175 years of history about, you know, licensing. I mean, it looked different 175 years ago, but, you know, essentially we have a long history of licensing our news, our information from the ground to other media organizations, to the financial sector, to companies. And so I will talk a little bit about how that plays out and how we have done that and how we've been able to protect our intellectual property while doing that.
Is there something different about this moment, though, because the AI businesses are becoming so huge and so integrated in our everyday life? Even if we just do a search, a basic search now, we might get an AI result rather than a typical result we might have received even two years ago. And there are lots of businesses, institutions, governments, lobbyists, PR firms that would happily supply these AI large language models with information, if you like, for free, because they'd prefer their version of it to be, I suppose, disseminated. And yet media companies are wanting to charge for that, for their content.
Yeah.
Does that make this a bit of a different scenario.
I mean, as you would imagine, I would say this, and I deeply believe this, our original reporting on the ground, it costs money. It costs a lot of money to people, put people in conflict zones. It costs a lot of money to report on financial scandals. And it's not just the financial cost, it's a human cost. You know, I've been EIC for 5 years, and we have lost 4 colleagues in that time in conflict zones, the major conflicts of the world, Afghanistan, Gaza, Ukraine, and southern Lebanon. And so, you know, it has a huge value, and original reporting takes expertise. And so, yes, we need to be paid for it. And whether you're paying for it, you know, on a subscription of a website, or whether you're paying for it in a license deal.
You make a persuasive case. It's whether or not the tech companies believe it enough or are interested enough to say, yeah, that is worth something.
Yeah, they should. We need to educate them.
You're listening to Global Roaming with Hamish McDonald and Laura Tingle, and we're speaking with the editor-in-chief of Reuters, Alessandra Galloni, who is delivering this year's Andreoli Lecture.
This organisation, like many, is accused of bias. What do you say to news organisations who are accused of that? What does Reuters do? Because I think you're less often accused of bias as a news agency.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, we are governed by something called the trust principles. These are 5 sort of commandments that we live by and that require us to be to provide reliable news, unbiased news, independent news. And we really do live by those every day. And there are many ways in which we do that. We spoke before about, you know, the importance of corrections. But there are many other sort of rules, tricks of the trade, if you will, you know, that ensure that a news organization can be and should be trusted in the way that we report. So we always identify ourselves, for example, as journalists. We always verify our facts. We never put out something, you know, without verifying it. And by the way, that is increasingly true in the world of AI. We use a lot of AI tools, but we always have a human overseeing those information before we put it out. And so I think that, yes, news organizations can be biased. The other thing is, we believe that journalists should leave their political opinions, you know, their beliefs at home when they come to the office and when they go out and report. All of us, we believe in free speech. Of course, we're journalists, and we believe that, you know, people should have their own personal opinions. But when they're reporting, they need to leave those opinions at home.
But we live in a world where that is starting to blur. People say, well, your perspective or your lived experience, or you're reflecting a particular community point of view on something and you're calling it as you see it. How do you disentangle that stuff?
Yeah, I mean, look, there's a value in the lived experience that we all have as humans. For example, at Reuters, we have a combination of foreign correspondents around the world and journalists who are reporting in their own countries. That's of huge value because they bring to their coverage knowledge that they've soaked up by living in that country, not just language, right? And so the way we balance that is by having the local expertise with the sort of global connecting of the dots. And so we see that as a huge value. But what we do is we have sort of checks and balances, right? And so that lived experience that some could say is, well, you know, it's some sort of bias, we check and balance it with the view of the international, the desk, the editors, you know, on the other side of the world. And so I really think that it is possible. You just have to take great care to live by that every day and check.
A decision that has been taken recently, which will directly impact listeners here, is the appointment of your number 2 at Reuters, Simon Robinson, as the new ABC News boss. What sort of ethos, what sort of journalism do you think he would bring to an organization like this? What should our audience expect to change?
Yeah, I knew I would come here to Australia and I'd get asked as a dish dirt on Simon.
I've heard you're very close. I've listened to you talk about it being a close working relationship. He does effectively all the things that you do.
Yes, I mean, we have worked together for more than a decade. And, you know, Simon is an incredible journalist. He has been a reporter and an editor in many places around the world. He has deep, deep expertise as a journalist. He has run large teams and he has run them, you know, with firmness, but with empathy and with clear direction. And he's fun. I think you guys are going to love him.
I wanted to ask your observation about news over the weekend of Trump's media companies looking to sell fast-tracked access to Trump's social media posts, some of which relate to conflict, some of which move markets. In a sense, this is kind of what Reuters does with its terminals. But what do you make of a serving president offering that up as a paid service?
Yeah, well, firstly, I was in China when all of this was happening, so I sort of missed all of this, so I have to catch up on exactly sort of, you know, what was said and what was intended. Look, you know, what we do has taken 175 years, you know, to build, right? And whether it be President Trump or anyone else, to sort of replicate that and do that seriously, you know, is something that I think will take a really long time and experience.
But if you could get access to what he's saying on Truth Social before everyone else, that potentially would be incredibly valuable.
Yeah, but again, the it's the same answer. You know, I would venture to say that Reuters has more sort of trusted and fact-based information than said other.
Do you think the media at large has done enough to look at the intersection of Trump's presidency with his financial interests?
Oh, I think we've done a lot. I mean, we have certainly looked at it, and others have. No, I think it's a very important area of coverage, and I think a lot of us are doing it.
Why then do you think that coverage doesn't lead to outcomes in terms of penalties if it's wrong?
I mean, I think these things take time. And I think the most important thing that journalists can do is, you know, again, report the facts and show what is happening. And then I think the results of that, you know, can take, there's a bit of a lag time with that. But I think we have to provide those facts and show, and the evidence and show what is going on, which I really do believe a lot of news organizations are doing.
You've just arrived in Australia from China. How do you compare the access to information, the free reporting of events in China with, say, America today?
Yeah, I mean, I don't live in China, so I don't, you know, I don't have huge experience there. You know, I will say that there is often a difficult reporting environment in China for our journalists there. I think it is well known, and one has to be careful. There are many countries now these days in which freedom of the press is not something that is guaranteed. I think we've seen that in the U.S. as well. I mean, we've seen restrictions to access at the White House. You will remember the restricted access, for example, of our colleagues at the Associated Press because they were not calling the Gulf of Mexico the Gulf of America. And I think that has continued. We've had access issues at the Pentagon where a number of news organizations have then left the Pentagon. There have been tighter, sort of been more restrictions on reporting, and not just on journalists, but also on sources. And so the New York Times was just subpoenaed, three of their journalists, I believe, were just subpoenaed a week ago for some reporting on Air Force One. So the reporting environment in the U.S. as well has become more restrictive. And in various countries.
Are your journalists in danger in the United States these days?
I mean, I'm always very careful, you know, when people say that, because journalist safety is the most important thing. And I think you cannot compare, you know, the U.S. to a front line in Ukraine or what's happened with our journalist in Gaza. So I want to, you know, be careful. But yes, I mean, one has to take great care right now to be a journalist in many countries in the world. That's very important. I mean, we have a very robust legal team that is helping our journalists all the time. We have an incredibly strong safety team that is helping our journalists, not just with physical safety, but also with online safety, for example. So yeah, I mean, one has to be very thorough and careful as a journalist these days.
Do journalists at large need to think more deeply about the way they cover populists, for example, in democracies? Often the language is couched, it's confusing, it might be disassembling a particular point or an argument. They may sound like they're saying something, but then when tested, it actually was something else. How do you think the media should go about dealing with the rise of populism?
Yeah, it's a really good question, and there's no one answer. But I do think that verifying what people say all the time is super important, so that, you know, you can say, you know, what a political leader or corporate leader or anyone, you can say what they're saying. I mean, if it's on the record and they've said it, you know, that is important for the, you know, for the record and people to know about it. However, if it is wrong, you need to say that and call it out right away.
Should
and
you say
verify.
Should you say it's a lie?
Well, if some things are mistruths, you just say it. I mean, lie.
But there is caution, right?
There
in the United States, particularly around the term lie. Like the New York Times has always hesitated.
Well, yeah, because, you know, a lie means you intended to lie and you are not in people's heads. And so I think it is better to say this person said X, all the evidence shows or the data shows or the official statistic says Y. That is better because, again, lie requires intent and we don't have the ability to be inside people's heads and what the intention is. So I agree that it's better just to point to the fact.
On the evidence, though, does it look to you like Trump tells lies?
Well, I think in some cases he says things that are not true and we have to correct them.
That was Alessandra Galloni, editor-in-chief of global news agency Reuters. Hamish, what an interesting life she must lead, but she must be exhausted.
Yes. As someone said to me recently, the news never begins and it never ends. It's just a constant sort of flow state. And I guess talking to her, I really had that sense. Can you imagine running an organisation with such a broad global footprint as Reuters, particularly considering how connected you are at all times to devices and news alerts and the rest of it? I think there's an interesting takeout for me from that conversation with Alessandra, which kind of cuts across some of the big issues we're talking about, whether it's AI, whether it's the loss of trust in the traditional news media, or whether it's the rise of the populists. In a sense, the news media does need to maybe be more self-reflective about its mistakes. It's, you know, she talked about corrections there and making them prominent, not just acknowledging the mistake, but also explaining how you got there in the first place. I think there's a lot of hand-wringing that goes on at the moment about how you report on a different kind of politics, and maybe from a more humble starting point could be some of the initial steps for the media in addressing that.
I think we should all be humble all the time, Hamish. I suppose the thing that I'm conscious of is that, you know, in this very weaponized world, you know, often people assert you've made a mistake when you might not have, or misrepresent what you've said, or partially quote what you've done. And in a way, journalists
Laura Tingle,
could be,
are you speaking from personal experience here?
I couldn't possibly say, Hamish, but I mean, the great irony, of course, is that this, you know, this is what people have complained journalists have done to them for years. So, you know, we can hardly complain. But I think it is a really interesting issue. And I think the other really important thing about Reuters is they are in all of these places that are really difficult to go to now. And it has become so hard to get you know, that frontline coverage. I mean, you think about all the places that are in contention in the world now, you know, Ukraine, Sudan, obviously the Middle East, and even the Gulf countries where, you know, you've got a lot of wealth, but nobody really has too many eyes on what's going on there other than an organisation like Reuters, which has just got such a massive footprint. But you know, as she says, you know, there's this need to be more and more careful about where you send your journalists, not just because it might be a random bomb, but because journalists are now so targeted or constrained in what they can do.
Well, before we go, a very quick bit of feedback for you, Laura Tingle. Siobhan says, Romers, love having Laura back on air. I listen daily. It's not always uplifting, but it is always fascinating. Look, we'll do our best to be a little more uplifting. We are taking note of the fact that the world can be pretty heavy at the moment, Laura. I don't know where you go for your light relief.
Yes, I'm not sure either, but we definitely need a bit more uplifting.
global.roaming@abc.net.au is the email address. Thanks to our producer, Aston Brown, supervising producer, Pat Sunderland, and executive producer, Laura McAuliffe. Laura Tingle, until next time.
See you next time, Hamish.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.